WNST, Tassel Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We are chatting with all sorts of people in all sorts of walks of life. If you've missed anything this week, please check out my chat with Tom Kelso and the Maryland Stadium Authority about the future of Camden Yards. Speaking of that, we have the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road, Raven Scratch-Offs to give away. We're going to be moving the Crab Cake Tour, also brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free, 0% financing for 5 years. And Jiffy Lube MultiCare, where we had our oil change last week. So I think we're good to maybe January, maybe February. I'm not driving too much here, but make sure you're getting out to Jiffy Lube as well. So I have a dozen dates. We're going to have crab cakes. We're going to get out and do it. Luke's going to join us. We're going to be having a good time out there. Also doing a fundraiser next week for the American Cancer Society that I want to plug next Thursday night. So make sure you check all that out at Baltimore Positive. This guy comes on maybe twice a year. He is really the godfather of sort of modern stats. Luke loves him. Luke loves being a part of this. I have been separated from my press credential, so I don't have like Super Bowl access where I usually run into him and his other people. He was a founder of a company, which we may or may not divulge here at this point, but has now moved on in his first time on now as the chief analytics officer of FTN Network. And you know him through DVOA and all the work that he's done. If you're anywhere in the nerdosphere of football, and Luke sits at the forefront of our nerdosphere, so I don't nerd it up nearly as well. Yeah, Aaron Schatz, when I told Luke you were coming on, and he like it just couldn't do it. Like it didn't work out timing wise because of practice and whatnot, and him being out at the facility, and him being the only guy they let in, and so he has to go. But like he's much better suited. I said this would be better with him because he's totally on your side of the fence and all these arguments, and I don't make them nearly as well as he makes them. But Lamar Jackson sort of sits at the forefront of a lot of the work you do, right? Like in a lot of ways as to how sports has changed, football's changed, the positions changed, the game's changed, expectations have changed, what you can or can't do, and what you can scheme up. Lamar's an incredible test tube for your kind of work. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because he's a really difficult guy to figure out where to sort of give the credit, right? Like, how much is Lamar Jackson in the passing game, and how much is problems with receivers versus what Lamar Jackson can do himself? In past years, there's been a lot of discussion about the scheme. Was it holding him back? There's the fact that the threat of him running opens things up for their running backs in a way that it doesn't with most other quarterbacks. So he's definitely an interesting guy to discuss.
Well, let's talk about this because we're on the forefront of the Seattle game, and maybe you hear this afterward. Maybe it goes one way or the other. Depends, right? But I want to keep this a little bit more broad that the NFC teams really struggle against him, and teams don't see him well or don't or can't scout for him. And I'll just say this. Rex Ryan is a multi-time friend of mine, a guest. When he was here, we were legendarily, so we were street friends. We would go have wings together. I did a show with his dad. I love Rex. So this isn't me kissing Rex's ass, but because I watch every week, and it doesn't always make sense. But 2 weeks ago, he said, I ran scout team against that. And you can't, you have to put a punt returner in to run scout team that week. And then you don't really get a scout team. You get a running back. And he said, so you really can't prepare for it. Now, maybe you would say, well, you know, Kyler Murray plays it this way. And so many teams played it that way. And it's been going on that. And in the college game, most of these guys feel it, see it, that we're no longer in 3-4 defenses and 4-3 defenses. Everything's very hybrid, and everything you must do to defend anything that's not a drop back passer becomes scheme and personnel related. What do you say to folks about defending Lamar and why sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work?
It's hard. You're right about the scout team thing. It's funny because I don't think that his record, I think his record against the NFC, there's a little bit of just sort of randomness in there because there's lots of AFC teams that also only see him once every couple of years, and they're not particularly prepared for him either outside the division. But if you just look at the last couple of games, like Detroit doesn't have anybody on their roster who could play Lamar for the scout team. Arizona doesn't really have anybody on their roster who could play Lamar unless the Kyler Murray played scout team, which if he's not healthy enough to start, he's not healthy enough to play scout team. So yeah, he's a hard guy to prepare for because he's, I wouldn't say unique, but a rare skill set definitely. And he's a hard guy to prepare for.
Well, even in my days of doing this professionally for three decades, Marvin Lewis is sort of famously, I've told this story, you know, a lot. I sat with him in a suite the week of Super Bowl 35, and he's watching the film of the Giants and the Eagles and the Vikings and freight train games. If you go back to those playoff games, and he said, they have no idea how fast we are. Like, they just can't prepare for how fast we're going to be to the hole. We're going to get there faster than they've ever seen it. And this is him talking shit, you know, 20 now they're making movies about it and like ESPN and whatever, but like I'm literally in an editing suite at the Hyatt and he says this to me and I'm thinking, does that even make sense? And then 23 years later, I go to out of town radio and I do stuff and it's like Lamar, especially a couple years ago when they were really doing it that way. Sometimes I just scratch my head about all this. I mean, he ran a draw play when they're up 9 points in the fourth quarter. That's the best play you've got. I mean, and especially when he's a $260 million player and he doesn't, this isn't, you would say this, this doesn't look anything like it looked under Roman or anything we've seen him do the last couple
years.
No,
it's much more pass forward now. Absolutely.
And seeing that, what do you make of it and its success at the halfway point at this point? Because I think we're all bullish when you see film of the Detroit game and say that's what it's supposed to look like, but it looks that way. And Luke and I fight about this. We fight about, because he always backs you. He's always got your back. That's why I want to bring you two in here and see what you guys would disagree about. But he says passing game sets up the running game. And I'm like, No. Go back to 2019. That was the threat of Lamar running, the reality of Lamar running, because he really would run, and then Mark Ingram, and the fact that nobody figured out Andrews that early on, and that sort of second and two, second and one, first, you know, or 12 yards on first down. But they weren't in third down much, and when they were, they went to fourth down and figured it out most of the time, right? And most of the time they got the ball crammed on the other side of the 50 and had no problem going on a fourth and two, fourth and three with Lamar, or kicking a 50-yard field goal because they got the best kicker. So they had a lot of assets, because everything we do here is comparing it to 2019 because they paid him for that now, right?
Yeah, so I would say that in general in football, the passing game does set up the running game. With Lamar Jackson, it's more like Lamar Jackson sets up the running game for everybody else, right? Because there's always the fear that he's going to bootleg or he's going to run or he's going to keep on a read option. And that opens up space for a guy like Gus Edwards. I mean, there's no question. Gus Edwards gets more yards per carry than he would otherwise because of the threat of Lamar Jackson. I also think when you look at their passing game this year, Jackson has played really well. Right. The problems they had, like against Pittsburgh, were just drop passes. And that's not Lamar Jackson's fault. So, I mean, their running game has been better than their passing game this year, but not because of Lamar, but because of the receivers.
Aaron Schatz is our guest. And I'm going to give you a chance to expound upon everything that you're doing that's new and old. You know, so Luke knows too. So we all know. But just on the concept of Lamar and the pocket and the offense and what Monken's trying to do with it ultimately. And again, I think that Detroit game is, we saw it. And I wrote about that last week in my columnist. I'm like, hey, one time, one day, that's, we know it can look like that. Now, will it look that way in Buffalo, Kansas City in January? Will we get to that point? I don't know. But they're a very healthy team right now. And the offensive line, healthier than it's been, certainly with Ronnie Stanley. We see Ricard in there playing a role. All of the receivers, even OBJ a little bit, getting the ball. I said Andrews is like the cowbell in the Saturday Night Live skit. I need more of that. I need more and more of that. The Zay Flowers thing feels like he's getting shoved around a little bit. But this Lamar in the pocket and teams trying to trap him with three guys last week, they, you know, trying to trap him and saying we're going to play eight deep and run around and not give you a receiver and cut off a running lane. And we know you sort of don't really want to run, and they don't really want you to run like that. But when he runs, it's devastating when that happens. But it feels like that's not a first and second quarter thing that they're doing. And if they can get a lead, you never get to see that. And that is a fundamental change to what they were trying to do. And it feels like him getting sacked is weird to me, dude. You know, him getting trapped is weird to me because
mobile quarterbacks get sacked more than stable quarterbacks do, more than, you know, guys without a lot of mobility actually get sacked less because they look to get rid of the ball whereas mobile quarterbacks tend to try to make things happen. And so they end up getting sacked more often. But I mean, if you only rush three and put eight in coverage, eventually someone's going to get open. It may only be short. It may only be for 4 or 5 yards, but get 2 5-yard passes and you've just moved the sticks without even getting to third down. So, I mean, I think it's all working really well for them right now. I mean, we're talking here about Lamar. Let me just put in a word. Their defense has been outstanding this year, which they're our number one defense right now against the pass. And the fact that they're doing that without the young edge rushers, that the young edge rushers are injured, but they're getting so much out of veterans like Clowney and Van Noy is fantastic.
Well, and then I think the defense in general, like we've been talking this week about Mike McDonald as potential head coaching candidate at some point, sort of getting to the point where he might fit that bill if this thing goes in that direction. We talk about great defense, and we'll get back to the offense. Roquan, and this week they made a trade a year ago this week to bring in a player they could never be bad enough to get, right? Like, you know, a top five-ish kind of guy that the Ravens would have to really stink to be able to get that kind of player and acquire that player and give up draft picks or whatever, and then sign him for a whole lot of money. And Luke and I went down that river as to what the value of that position is in other places and the way he plays it. Hey man, I'm from the Ray Lewis school of dancing the squirrel. And I was in every one of those games, every one of those locker rooms. I saw the impact on the field, off the field. This guy, and I know you measure things that try to measure the leadership and the heart and all that stuff. This has been a different – it's been a heart transplant for the defense the way DaCosta dreamed it up when he brought him in, because they went all in the middle of the year and Lamar got hurt. But seeing it all kind of come together with Patrick Queen playing a different role.
Playing better than he did in his first couple of years, definitely.
And the thought to draft Kyle Hamilton in this sort of this weirdly hybrid role that this defense sort of mandates and calls for tell me about the defense as you see it. What would you call it? You know, it's not a 46. It's not. What is this?
Well, it's definitely they do a lot with the safety. Roquan, you know, there is a lot of argument in the analytics world about the value of the off-ball linebacker. That because of the, you know, historically the off-ball linebacker was very often that thumper who came in to stop the run. And because the run is less important than it used to be, the off-ball linebacker is less important than it used to be. But Roquan, like Fred Warner in San Francisco, is a pass stopper too, not a run stopper. And that's what gives him a lot of value compared to other off-ball linebackers around the league. I think if you said, who are the best off-ball linebackers around the league? I think you'd have three guys who really move the needle in the passing game in particular. And that's Warner, Matt Milano from Buffalo, and Roquan. So, I mean, there are no numbers to measure leadership, right? That doesn't mean those things don't exist. There's just no numbers to measure them. But, I mean, their defense is playing outstanding. He's obviously plays a very central role in it. Other players are playing better than they did before he was around. So, I mean, he's definitely a straw that stirs the drink.
Aaron Schatz is our guest. He has been a multi-time a contributor to what we do around here. I think everybody in our audience either knows about you or should know about you in regard to you know, where you sort of set the standard for the way we look at the game and analytics. And I guess I can take this into the gambling side of things here a little bit. I work with the Hollywood Casino in Perryville. I'm picking my games. I'm way over 500, feeling good about my picks and whatnot. But at an analytical level, everything that we're doing now in the gambling space in math is about probability. And my dad, it's a shame my dad didn't live. My dad would be proud of me wearing the Pastorini throwback, by the way. I didn't want to wear the Warren Moon to put you in that run and shoot, you know, gangster role of your friend Mike Tenier. But my dad loved math. My dad loved statistics. That's why he loved baseball. He loved batting averages. He loved all of that. Stratomatic cards, APBA, probability, all of that in the 70s when I was a kid. Clearly, because I'm wearing 70s Houston Oilers stuff I was a kid. This is the advanced part of where you are taking your company into a place that I think it sort of merges all of this and it creates, dare I say, in the Jim Feist tone, value for folks out there.
Yeah. Okay. So first thing I'm going to say is this. I don't know if you're listening to this after the Seattle game and maybe they lost the Seattle game. And let's assume that you're listening before the Seattle game or that they beat Seattle. If you want to put money on the Ravens to win the Super Bowl, this is the time. We love them. Our numbers love them. Our numbers right now have them as the Super Bowl favorites. which is very different from the market. And I think there's a real arbitrage experience.
They've been
so good this year. And one of the things is, like, they've slowed down a little bit in the fourth quarter with big leads. And the new version of our DVOA stat that I introduced this year lowers the weight of how teams do with a big lead in the fourth quarter, right? Because we know that if you're on top by 30 points and you shut down your offense, that doesn't really tell you anything about the offense in the future. You're shutting it down because you're up by 30 points, right? So, like, that Detroit game was so good because they did all their damage in the first three quarters, right? Compare that to the 70 burger that Miami put on Denver earlier this year, where they had three huge plays in the fourth quarter when the game was already decided, right? Like, whereas Baltimore had all its big plays in the first three quarters before that game with Detroit was decided. So our numbers think Baltimore is just absolutely outstanding this year. And because there's no superlative team this year, right? Philadelphia is 7-1, but nobody in the AFC is better than 6-2, right? So the Ravens have the top record in the AFC. They've got as good a chance as anybody to get the number one seed in the AFC, although their schedule does get harder from here on out, right? Their schedule gets a lot harder. They have really tough December with Jacksonville, San Francisco, and Miami. But our odds of them winning the Super Bowl are a lot better than the market odds of them winning the Super Bowl. And you can put money on them to win the Super Bowl without feeling like you're being a homer.
Give me what you do in a nutshell now, because I think it's a lot different than where you came from at your former home.
Well, it's a little less editing and more writing. So I'm now with the FTN Network. You can find my stuff at ftnfantasy.com/DVOA. But it's not like I'm doing more fantasy than I was before. It's still, you know, the same, doing the ratings, talking about which teams are likely to win the Super Bowl, talking about what teams need to do to build a Super Bowl champion. It's pretty similar to what I was doing before. Also, I'm still at ESPN. I'm a part-time employee at ESPN, so you can find my writing at ESPN Plus every couple of weeks. And some of my picks are at ESPN Chalk every week.
Well, I tell you what, you know, over the course of time and setting the standard for all of this stuff, I do think that people look to all of these things. And I know this, the industry looks to these things to say the value of what we're going to pay you this year or next year. I can't imagine that the public, that the way that the investments have changed here recently hasn't changed, you know, just sort of where the future is going to be, right? I think for all of us, I've done sports radio for 30 years, you know?
The Ravens look at me, man. I mean, Harbaugh's mentioned DVOA in press conferences. So I know the Ravens are one of the teams that definitely follow my stuff.
There's no doubt about that. All right, so for the rest of the league, for you loving the Ravens, give me some things you love or maybe some things you don't love about some other teams. And Bengals, as an example, being a team that feels like they're coming back. And
coming
like
on, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the problems are when your quarterback's limping, not good. Whether it's that's in September or whether that's in January, very, very hard to win, especially when mobility is part of the game. Burrow looks like Burrow, which allows Chase to play Chase. You know, like that.
Their defense is better. Burrow, you know, weeks five. 5-6, people were like, oh, Burrow's back. His performance really wasn't back to his Burrow level. Week 8 against San Francisco, it was back. And now you're like, oh, he's healthy. They're dangerous now.
Well, I mean, big games this week too, right? Like two good teams going over to Germany. We got the Cowboys and the Eagles. We got the Bills and the Bengals as well. So I think we'll sort all of that out. For your website and people to get in now and just go out to give me the fan approach to what they're going to find when they go out to the big website.
Well, yeah, I mean, ftnfantasy.com/DVOA. You'll find all the content by me. There's a couple of other of my old writers from Football Outsiders that have moved over to FTN, Brian Knowles and Cale Clinton, and we're writing stuff about what's going on with teams. And then you need to get an FTN Stats Plus or Fantasy Plus subscription. And that gives you the deep dive, like all the splits of DVOA and all the historical numbers and the ability to get my picks against the spread every week and all of that stuff. So that's where you'll find my stuff is ftnfantasy.com/DVOA. Or if you just search DVOA on the internet, my name will come up.
For you, who have been the best players in the game this year, the players of the highest value?
I think that I would vote for Josh Allen for MVP right now. Because the problems that Buffalo is having are not about Allen. It's about the defensive injuries that they're having. I probably put Patrick Mahomes second. Certainly the best non-quarterbacks have been Christian McCaffrey, Tyreek Hill, Myles Garrett, right, is fantastic for Cleveland. Their defense has been the best in the league. We have Baltimore's defense number two, Cleveland's defense number one. There's some interesting discussions to have about certain quarterbacks and how much they are good and how much it's the scheme and the teammates. You know, that's Tua, that's Purdy, that's Jared Goff. It's the same discussion about all three guys. And I don't think they do it as much themselves. Those are all good players. They're all valuable players. They're not as valuable as the quarterbacks who can do it on their own, like Allen and Mahomes and Jackson.
Well, Aaron, it's interesting you bring that up, and I wasn't going to bring it up, but I shall now, which is, you know, the Ravens make all these gaudy stats, and I've seen them run around a bunch. Five of these quarterbacks I haven't heard of. You know what I mean? Or if you've heard of them, it's Gardner Minshew, and you're like, okay, fine. But it's like that the backups, rookies, guys that shouldn't be good against them, guys they should sort of dominate if they were healthy. And I would also say the first couple of weeks, they weren't very healthy. Without Marlon Humphrey, I think they're a different team.
Stanley being hurt, and wasn't Lindebaum hurt for a while?
Yeah. And the wide receivers have all been in and out as well. So, and obviously the running situation with Dobbins, the minute he went out, it sort of has changed the dynamic. I thought a Jacobs or a Henry acquisition,
I would have said they would have been
the Super Bowl favorite, right? But you've
already
said
like their
they
backs
are
good enough. I feel like their backs are good enough. It's the offensive line and Jackson himself that really make the running game go. Would have been an upgrade, Henry. Yeah, a little bit of an upgrade, but I don't think as much as it would have cost.
Well, I mean, if the cost is a second round draft pick, I mean, they've been willing to play that poker. To your point, to win a championship, I've said if they had that kind of, I said to Luke this week, if they had that Mark Ingram, they had that guy, which they had in 19. That's because I would say what was missing the last couple of years was Marshall Yanda.
We
would always say, what makes things different in 2019? Well, I was in the locker room after one of those games. I don't think I saw Marshall Yanda smile from the minute they won the Super Bowl in New Orleans until literally. And I've known Marshall from the minute he came over on Harford Road and we got these pictures. We looked like two kids sitting together. And, you know, Marshall's probably going to the Hall of Fame, I would think. And I remember seeing him just ebullient in the locker room, like, this is fun. And I remember all of that vibe of that. Now, they got smacked in the face in the playoffs because they couldn't pass the ball and somebody figured him out. And that's unfortunate. We're all remembering that and saying, how is it going to be different? You know, and how it's going to be different is to have a dominant running game that I don't feel like they've had a dominant running game the way they need to.
No, but Jackson makes the room. The offensive line makes the room. If I were them on the trade deadline, I would have tried to get more depth for the pass rush. Like, I think it would have helped them more. And they didn't do either thing, right? They didn't do the running back and they didn't do the pass rush. But for example, if they had been in on Montez Sweat or Chase Young, I think that actually would have been better for the Ravens than Derrick Henry or Saquon Barkley.
My God, it's like having Luke on, dude. You guys are like the same. He said that all week. Aaron Schatz is here. Please go find him out on the interwebs. He's one of the great football people. Was once introduced to me in a hallway underneath the Hoosier Dome, and I don't admit that I spend that much time in Indiana, with another Baltimore guy. Jim Schwartz introduced me to this fella and says, this guy, he knows stuff. And I, you know, by now I thought you would have been spit out of three different football organizations and been miserable and like all that. So I give you major props for staying on this side of getting your press credentials taken away and being miserable in a different way. A Schatz, NFL. It's like the beer in Milwaukee, only spelled different. Schatz, NFL. You can find a picture of him and Seth Meyers up on the front of his Twitter X. And you can also find them out on the website. I'll give this out as well at FTN Network. And there's a whole hub there. There's a whole way to get DVOA and do all the cool stuff with all the cool people that he's been doing it with. And, you know, Luke sends his best. And this is like where I trash talk him a little bit. I said, I'm going to tell Schatz that you're ducking him.
He's got responsibilities, man. You know what? We'll do this again come playoff time.
All
Baltimore's
right.
Going to be in the playoffs. It would be very difficult for them to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, what's the odds of them not making the playoffs now?
Percent, like tiny. So you we'll know, do this again come like week 17 or 18.
Dude, I'm the guy.
He can be there then, and we'll talk about how they're looking going into the playoffs.
I'm the guy who was in Vegas last week for like 36 hours, and I didn't even really look in a sports book to check odds or anything because sort of the phones are available, and I work with my partners up in Hollywood. I'll be up there on December 1st doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. But like, you know, the whole notion that the Ravens are the favorite, don't talk like that. You know what I mean? Like, please, it's way...
Well, they're my favorite. They're not the favorite in Vegas, man. The Chiefs are the favorite in Vegas. Chiefs and 49ers still, but yeah, they're my favorite, yeah.
All right, well, give it a couple of weeks. You know, we'll see how it goes around here. Wake me in 2 weeks after they get through Cincinnati and Cleveland and Cincinnati in that order in a couple of weeks, and Cincinnati coming
their
on.
Their schedule does get a lot harder from here. So, like, we have them rated really well, but their schedule does get a lot harder. But by the way, they have the number two hardest schedule the rest of the way. The number one hardest schedule the rest of the way is Cincinnati.
All right. Well, I think all of your – they haven't played great quarterbacks, right? Like, I mean, I'll give them Goff, and they beat the hell out of them, and they did it at home. And you know, I'm just – I want to see –
No, they injured – they played injured Burrow, and otherwise they have not played great quarterbacks. So, yeah, here comes Geno Smith and healthy Burrow and Herbert.
Are you down on the Honolulu blue? I mean, while I'm wearing Columbia blue.
No, I like Detroit this year a lot. I like Detroit. They've really built their defense up. Their offense already was really good last year. Ben Johnson is going to be a head coach next year. Like, I don't think he can make it through another hiring cycle without getting hired by somebody. Let me tell you the truth. I'd love to have him here in New England if Belichick calls it a day. Ben Johnson is a great young mind. The guy is the offensive coordinator in Detroit.
It's lovely to see the Patriots struggle the way they are. And yeah, I don't want to talk ish about the Steelers because they might have already won by the time we get it. Because I never, ever, this is what I've learned, never, ever shovel dirt on the Steelers.
It's really
or
interesting.
The Patriots.
It's really interesting to me that people are so happy about the Patriots being terrible and they don't feel the same way about the Packers being terrible, even though the Packers also have been good for 20 years. Like, this is the first time in a long time that the Packers and the Patriots have been bad.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole thing about their quarterbacks being so dislikable, you know what I mean? The two quarterbacks of their era.
Of the Packers, yeah.
Yeah, have just like, you know what I mean? Their reputation precedes them for who they are. And like the fact that we don't, yeah, I never hated the Pack. Maybe it's Bart Starr. Maybe it's because I've been to Green Bay and had the kielbasa and the sauerkraut and, you know, eating the bratwurst and drank the beer and did all that. I don't know. It was really easy to hate on the Cowboys and hate on the Dolphins when I was a kid in the 70s. Oh, man. You know, like, and it's like I have a Steelers buddy that comes on. Seth Elkin came off from the Maryland Lottery. And, like, I'm wearing my Oiler thing and I'm thinking, like, I don't know. It'd be like wearing a Hartford Whaler jersey in front of like a Bruins. You know what I mean? Like you never won. You know what I mean? So like this is a benign throwback, right? Like, I mean, I love Dan. It's a benign throw. It doesn't offend anybody except the people of Houston. When the people of Tennessee wear it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I want a throwback. I want Doug Williams, Oklahoma Outlaws. That's the throwback I'm looking for.
Here's a throwback for you. All right. I want you to go back and I want you to evaluate the 1976 and 77 stats of Burt Jones and tell me that he wasn't.
Oh, Burt Jones, 76. We did a thing at one point about the best quarterback seasons ever, and I had Burt Jones, 76, as the best quarterback season ever. He was fantastic before he got injured. Oh, man, he was the man.
I tell people you're smart. I do. You know that,
right? Burt Jones is 76. If you look at rushing value and passing value, he's fantastic. Just amazing.
Yeah, Luke will be so proud of me for bringing that up. All right, good. We miss Luke around here, and Luke misses Aaron, and Aaron will find Luke, and they'll nerd it up out on the internet and do all that stuff. But I love having those guys around. Thanks for the perspective you bring, and I'm blessed that Jim Schwartz is my friend to introduce me to you many, many years ago, and you always make time and come on here and try to educate our audience about Lamar, offense, defense. Always agreeing with Luke, always, which my audience appreciates.
I think he's agreeing with me.
Oh, shots fired across the Pennsylvania bow towards Shrewsbury. Find Aaron out on the internet. You can find me doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. And if Shots gets down here, he can bring me some of that legal clam chowder, and I'll make sure we got some crab cakes for him on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We'll be giving these away a dozen times between now and Christmas. Woo, we got a lot of things going on around here. It's all up there. It's all brought to you by our friends at Window Nation in conjunction with our friends at Jiffy Lube Multicare as well. Find all that up. WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. BaltimorePositive.com.